Hail, you heroes, hawks, heralds, crows, pirates, and wardens. Welcome to the Dragon Age Lorecast, where we unpack, discuss, and galaxy brain about all the lore behind the Dragon Age series.
We are so excited to bring you this podcast. Every episode, we'll be talking about a different topic in the Dragon Age universe. From character deep dives to exalted marches and elven gods, we will cover it all.
There will be spoilers. And always remember, swooping is bad.
Hello, and welcome to the Dragon Age Lorecast, where we talk about Dragon Age and its lore. I'm one of your hosts, Austin, also known as Teacup.
And I'm your other host, Shelby or Sheikup.
And we are here again with another lore episode, continuing our Creatures of Thedas series. And we have another creepy creature to talk about today.
Yeah, I mean, it is pretty creepy. It's basically a spider. Like, we're talking about that. Vartaral is the proper name for it. But yeah, I do agree they're creepy. And if you don't like spiders, here's some good news. We don't know a ton about it, so most of this episode is going to be devoted to the side character anyway.
So I guess this is our official start to Spooktober.
Yeah, it really is. I'm gonna have to rearrange the schedule just to make that a theme now. And right. Last October, we started this series for the first time.
Thought we did spirits and stuff for last October.
No, because for Halloween last year, we did our costume party with the Two Girls, One Ship podcast, and they talked about Nugs.
Oh, I guess that's true.
So anyway, the history of the Lorecast, Lorecast lore, if you will. Anyway, so let's dive into fun facts about the Vartaral. I know I said earlier that this is basically a spider, but in fact, it is not, because it only has 5 legs instead of 8. So it's not an arachnid. I don't know if that's helpful to those of you who have arachnophobia or not, but it's not an arachnid because it only has 5 legs.
We'll have to ask some of our friends with arachnophobia to see if it counts.
I mean, we're thinking of one person, I'm sure.
It's true.
That would be you, Colcushions. I know you're listening. Unless he's already turned the episode off.
It's possible.
Okay, so I don't have a ton of fun facts today, but my second one is that a Vartaral very briefly appears in the Destiny trailer for Dragon Age 2. And then lastly, which we will definitely explore later in the episode, actually not really later, here in just a few minutes, but the Vartaral is very closely associated with elven culture and folklore. So let's get into how they're connected to the elves, the history of the Vartaral, how they came to be, all that fun stuff. You might be rolling your eyes if you're one of those people that's like, why does everything always have to be connected to the elves? Buckle up, because according to many Dalish tribes, the first Vartaral was created in the time before Arlathan was founded. And so they have, I wouldn't say they worship these creatures, but they do have like a reverence for them, like almost a healthy fear, like, you both fear and respect these creatures, almost kind of like Cunarian dragons a little bit. So because these creatures came into being before Arlathan was founded, they see them as like ancient beyond ancient, etc. And we actually learn the origin story for the Vartaral, or at least one, from its codex. So this is what it says. In the days before Arlathan, there was a city in the mountains beloved by Durthaman, keeper of secrets. Its people were wise beyond measure, thanks to his counsel, and the city flourished. Then a high dragon settled in the mountains, and her hunger threatened the city. The elders cried out to Durthaman for protection as the dragon's rampages struck ever closer. And for 3 days and nights, the people shut themselves in their homes and watched the skies in dread. On the fourth day, Durthaman heard them. He whispered into the mountains, and the fallen trees of the forest gathered, shaping an immense and agile spider-like beast. It was the Vartarau. With lightning speed, vicious strikes, and venomous spit, it drove back the serpent. From then on, it was the guardian of the city and its people. Many years passed. The gods were trapped by Fenharel, and the people were left to gather in Arlathan. But the Vartarau kept its everlasting vigil, guarding Durthaman's city as it eventually crumbled to dust. To this day, it stands there, watching over the rubble. Any travelers foolish enough to wander there find themselves face to face with wrath incarnate. End quote. Thoughts? Questions? Comments?
That's interesting, the connection to this one city, and especially to, like, Durthaman, because isn't Durthaman also, like, God of the dead?
Yes.
And, like, departed spirits?
Yes.
So that's also interesting to me.
No, we got that wrong. Durthaman's twin is the one that's of the dead. Falandin, yeah. But anyway, I do find it interesting because it's like, in theory then, I have a lot of thoughts. First of all, this story, this codex entry is so similar to what happens in The Hobbit. Like, okay, a dragon comes and takes over this mountain, threatening the town below it. The people live in fear and they need someone to rescue them. Like, that is literally Bilbo Baggins' adventure to killing Smaug. Am I wrong? You're going to sit there and you're going to tell me that I'm wrong?
I mean, it's similar. It's not an exact match, but it's similar. I found this interesting. One thing that I wanted to kind of get on is this city in the mountains. And, you know, there's Durthaman might not be the god of the dead. He does have a close connection being the twin of the god of the dead. And so I just want you two, I'm going to post something to you in the chat, but it's a sketch from Brother Jenna TV of Navara City. And I just think it's interesting, the connection, because the necropolis is in Navara City. And so, and there's like this weird connection with the dead and all of that. So is there some connection of this area of where Navara is? And the fact that Navara does situate itself at least near the Waking Seas and kind of near to Venter. So it wouldn't be that far of a stretch for them to be near Arlathan or the Arlathan Forest. Maybe there's some connection here with this city and this ancient elven legend.
See, that's interesting. That's very interesting. I took it in a complete opposite direction because I'm sitting here theorizing about Kirkwall. Because we know that Teventer, and even though this is before Teventer, but we know that Teventer's empire stretched to Kirkwall. That's why they have the chains on the harbor walls. So it doesn't strike me as odd that the empire that Teventer thought was mighty that came right before Teventer could have also potentially stretched out that far. So to me, it's like, well, there's a mountain that overlooks Teventer and Sundermount, or that overlooks Kirkwall and Sundermount. And then there's the city. And I mean, I would argue that Teventer's crumbling. That's what the Codex says. So is the Vartarau from this Codex entry the one that we meet in Dragon Age 2? Those are all the circles that my brain has been turning in.
That's also a possibility, especially since, like, this is the only place where we actually encounter Vartarau.
Yes.
In the entire game series.
Right. 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 So then that leads me to my next point, kind of, which is that, like, in theory, since the Vartaral was created to protect the elves, they should never attack an elf. But we know that that has happened several times. Like, the Vartaral attacks your party when you go to kill it in two. And even before that, it had attacked Paul, Meryl's friend or former friend, and I think several other members of her clan. So, you know, and I think the codex or something else basically says that the Vartaral, like, they can tell who's an elf by their smell. And so they're not supposed to attack elves unless it's in self-defense, obviously. So, you know, regardless of that, they do, and they have, and we've seen that in game, that they have indeed they've attacked elves and non-elves alike without regard for their race. And also, how does that impact half-elves? I'm very curious.
Well, it's interesting to me because I want to bring up a point, and I know that they're not, like, the same, but in D&D, when a major magic user creates an entity that outlasts the spell. So the main thing is the golems, the flesh golems, the steel golems, the iron golems, all of these different golems that they can create. It only obeys the creator. And once the creator dies, it basically cannot be reasoned with. And so I wonder if, because Dearthamin creates the Vartarel, and maybe while he was still walking the earth for Fadus, they would obey and know the elves, but now that he's sealed away, they've kind of gone mad without the presence of their creator. And similarly, and I think that this would be another interesting point, because both Solas and the ancient elves in Inquisition talk about how the Dedalish and the city elves are not like them. So maybe there's a change in their scent all these years, centuries later.
I think that's very possible. I think that that is a really good argument. So another question I had was, you know, obviously we see Vartarals living around elves, and we know that they, you know, are intimately connected with the elves, like their existence. However, we often see them living around or near ancient elven ruins, specifically like the Alluvians. What do you think that suggests?
So you'll have to correct me if I'm wrong, but when we go through the Alluvians to the crossroads in Trespasser, we're in Arlathan City.
Dude, I don't know the answer to that question. I can't research it.
I don't remember if that's the case or whatever, but we know the Alluvians connect places. It's like a place where you can travel between and get there, and that's why they're racing against Gryphius, because if he got control of the Alluvian network, he would be able to traverse all of Thedas in an instant, and that would be detrimental to everyone. And so I guess my theory here is that the Vartarels are guarding the Alluvians because it is a ridiculously powerful artifact, and anyone who could have it could wreak havoc on Thedas.
Yeah, that's true. It also, the fact that they linger there makes me wonder if Dearthamin was connected. Like, maybe he's the one that created the Alluvians in the first place.
It's possible. I mean, he is the keeper of secrets, so it is up there with something he would do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, let's get into the basics here. So, In addition to these interesting lore connections, we know a little bit of information about how they live. They tend to live in secluded places, which we see in Dragon Age 2 with the one that inhabits Sundermount. We also know that they hunt big game, like elk and bears. To me, because they're predators of big game, that suggests that they probably have an important role in the ecosystem of Thedas, which also to me suggests that there's not just one, like that there's a lot more of them than just the one or two that we've seen. So, according to the tabletop RPG book, the only creature that the Vartarel is a prey of is the dragon. And even dragons don't always win fights when they take on a Vartarel. So, basically, they live unopposed. Like, they are the apex predators.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to me, the Vartarel, like, and its top of the food chain status, other than, like, dragons, and even then, they can defend themselves against dragons. And so it's interesting to me that they are up there when it seems like a dragon could easily just like squash one. You know what I mean?
I mean, yeah. They also are very spiky. So I don't know. But basically, that's all we know about them. We have a few examples of places we've seen them to go through, but like that's the information we have. Like, it's not a lot. So we've seen them in 4 places throughout all 3 games, throughout all the books and comics, only 4 places. So the first place we ever see them is in the Dragon Age Origins Witch Hunt DLC, which is the DLC where you go to find Morrigan. And basically, a Vartarel attacks the Warden Commander, Ariane, and Finn, who are 2 of your companions. And they attack you, or it attacks you, when you're in the Dragonbone Wastes. Everyone is super surprised by its presence. And they basically hypothesize that its presence has something to do with the alluvion that's in the area. Hence my previous question. And then obviously we see one in Dragon Age 2. It's a main major plot point. With Meryl, it had taken the lives of 3 Dalish hunters and Meryl's friend Paul. So it killed 4 Dalish elves. Meryl and Hawk then killed it in 934 Dragon. And then somehow, 3 years later, it revived itself and attacked Hawk's party again when they returned. So that's confusing. We don't know anything about how that happened. Just magic mumbo jumbo, I guess.
The Force. Oh, sorry. Wrong fandom, wrong podcast.
Not the Force. Not this time. And then we'll go to 2 book references in The Masked Empire, Grand Duke Gaspard and Empress Selene's parties under a temporary truce, actually combat a Vartarel that is there guarding the central alluvion, like, activation chamber area. So again, we see a Vartarel in connection to an alluvion.
Coincidence? I think not.
I don't know. Once it's happened twice now, so pretty suspicious if you ask me. And then the last and most recent place that we've seen of Vartarel is in the Dragon Age The Missing comic that just recently finished up. And so we see Varric, Lace Harding, Strife, and Ireland sneak past a Vartarel in the Arlathan Forest. And they are trying to gain entrance to a temple that holds the Crucius Stone. So while this one is not specifically guarding an alluvion, it is close by an ancient artifact. So to me, that's suspicious as well.
There is such a connection to these ancient elven ruins and the alluvions. What are these Vartarel guarding?
Mm-hmm. Great question. Great question. So that's pretty much all I have about the Vartarel. Do you have any final thoughts about them before we kind of wrap it up and go to our mid-break?
Make sure that when you do it, especially if you're going on Nightmare, that you will be forced to have Meryl in your party. So if you are not running 2 mages, you'll definitely want to make sure that Esther's is there with you if you're playing on Nightmare.
Are you speaking from experience?
No.
All right, well, let's head to the mid-break.
What makes your ram so special?
Well, he's always brought the family luck, and his advice helped us make our fortune.
Your ram offered advice? How do you get your hair to do that, Dorian? With magic?
With proper hygiene and grooming. Maybe all 3 of you should get acquainted.
Kirkwall's not brown enough for me. But hey, no darkspawn.
Ferelden wasn't that brown. The dirt and muck gave it character.
All right. Well, welcome to the middle of the show where we take time to thank our patrons. Thank you so much to all of our patrons and support that you give us there. A special thank you to our first patrons, Lisa M. and Genesis, and a special thank you to the Nug King, Lewis H. Yes, thank you for your support and everything that you can do there. If you cannot support us on Patreon, we totally get that. You can leave us ratings and reviews on Apple or Spotify. And if you do that and leave us some kind words, we will read it out on a future episode of the show. So today we do have a Spotify comment from Emily, and this is on the Bogfisher, Druffalo, and Gurgut episode. And her review says, "I love this podcast. For someone who will on occasion skip the codex, this is fantastic. Where I live in Scotland, I have no one to discuss this world with, so thank you so much, Cups." Thank you, Emily, for your kind comment. We are glad that we can help you dive deeper into the world of Dragon Age, which is the whole reason we started this podcast. And so we really appreciate that. Last thing to shout out is, you know the drill by this point. If you're new, come join us on Discord. You can hang out with us there at the Cups Podcasting and More Discord server. That link's in the episode description. And that's all I have for the mid-break, so I think we can get back into the episode.
Have a care where your eyes linger, Alistair.
Yes, well, don't worry. It's not what you think.
I see.
I was looking at your nose.
And what is it about my nose that captivates you so?
I was just thinking that it looks exactly like your mother's.
I hate you so much.
I was one of the crows you hired to kill the Grey Wardens.
I thought you looked familiar.
Well, I just wanted to report that I failed my mission, Loghain.
You don't say.
I'm terribly broken up over it.
Well, thank you kindly for informing me.
You fear barbarians will swoop down upon you.
Yes, swooping is bad.
All right, so our side character today, which is kind of almost a mini character deep dive because we know a lot of information about this one, is a side character named Sutherland, who you may or may not know. Do you know who Sutherland is, Austin?
He is a... person. Do you know in Inquisition?
Okay, I was gonna say, do you even know what game he comes from? But congratulations, you do.
He wants to be a mercenary captain, but isn't a mercenary captain, then can become a mercenary, head a group. But he has his own company, and there are a bunch of war table missions that you can send them on.
Okay, so you know a lot about him, but he's not quite a mercenary. He wants to just be part of the Inquisition. But yes. So he can play a major role in several war table missions. And his first name is Donal, not Donald. Donal Sutherland is his name. And he is a very young, very inexperienced, very green young man who witnesses a bunch of bandits attacking and stalking Inquisition patrols. And so he comes to the Inquisition and basically is like, hey, I want to help take down these bandits. Please let me help. Give me resources so I can help you. You can find him on the second floor of the Herald's Rest in Skyhold. And if you talk to him, you can get a bunch of quests for the war table. And so that's how his story kind of begins. So these quests for the war table are, and I believe that these are in order, but they are new to the crew, a young hopeful, a patrol for the crew, outfitting the crew, a test of metal and the crew of ambassadors, a crew of adventurers, Sutherland and company missing, a company of heroes. So there are quite a lot of quests, correct? But in the beginning, when he offers his help to the Inquisitor, you can either accept or turn him down. If you use him to get rid of the bandits, he then recruits an elven mage named Voth to join his crew. At this point, you can encourage Sutherland to keep building his company or not. You don't have to, but you can. In a patrol for the crew, which is the second quest, you can send Sutherland and his company out on another quest where they are tasked with patrolling the Skyhold area. And Shade, who is a human archer, will join the crew after that. Shade and Sutherland do then begin a kind of like flirtationship throughout the game that will eventually turn into an actual real relationship by the time of Tevinter Nights. And when the Inquisitor goes to visit with Sutherland next, they are instead met by someone named Rat, who we learn is Sutherland's like runner. They deliver messages and stuff. Rat informs the Inquisitor that Sutherland has now gone missing and basically gives the Inquisitor a map of their latest adventure and is like, we don't know where he is. Please help. So the Inquisition can offer the job to some volunteers. The Inquisition's soldiers can flush them out, or the situation can be announced as a hunt in hopes that local nobles will take up the challenge to find this group of people. Either way, the Inquisitor can find the crew at the Storm Coast fighting Darkspawn, and so the Inquisitor can then personally step in to help them fight off the Darkspawn. When the Inquisitor then approaches Sutherland and his newfound company of heroes, Sutherland offers the Inquisitor money to recuperate the upfront costs associated with training them. The Inquisitor can either accept, allow Sutherland to keep the money, or to advise Sutherland to go and sponsor another company just like him. So after all of those quests, and I know I blurred them all together, but the Inquisitor can interact with Sutherland one more time. This time, Sutherland informs the Inquisitor that the company has plans to leave and find a keep of their own, though they will remain an adventuring company for the Inquisition. All in all, throughout Dragon Age Inquisition, Sutherland and his company go from being a new, inexperienced group of wannabe fighters to renowned heroes of the Inquisition. It's a great story. It very much sounds like a D&D campaign to me.
It does sound like a D&D campaign. Especially, it's very similar to your first D&D campaign story.
Not really at all. You like gave us a box of things to deliver, and there were way more dragons than Sutherland has. And we also encountered a king and his son and his other son and his other daughter. Sutherland doesn't do any of that.
Right, but you all were a seemingly unknown group. And then get up to a point of vast importance.
I suppose you have an argument.
You basically saved a country and then overthrew their government.
No, that is incorrect. We saved a country and their government collapsed, at which point we stepped in out of the generosity and goodness of our hearts.
You could have appointed anyone.
No, you couldn't have. Not in that world. Let's get back to Dragon Age, though. So Sutherland's story, it does not stop in Inquisition because they also show up in the Mage Killer comic and in the Tevinter Nights book. So in Mage Killer, when Corypheus reopens the breach over Haven, Sutherland's adventuring company alongside Marius and Tessa for Scythia, they are sent to basically like clear a route up through the ruins of the temple to provide the Inquisitor with reinforcements. And so in the caves under the temple, they face a lot of various demons, including a massive pride demon. And there's a situation where like Shade jumps on a demon's back and is like almost about to die. But Tessa pushes her away at the last minute and like takes the force of that blow. Even though Tessa is very injured by that, Marius and the company do eventually defeat the demon and clear the passageway for the Inquisitor. And Sutherland's company, they pretty much escape unscathed. But then into Winter Nights, we have a little bit more depressing story, a frightening story, I would also add. This is in the callback chapter. We meet Sutherland once again, though he is now Sir Donal of the Hinters and is a landed knight. His company is sent to investigate Skyhold after its caretakers sent a message about restoring the fresco and then went silent. They have not heard from anyone at Skyhold in a long time. So Sutherland and at least a couple of his friends show up and find one of the caretakers has been like killed and gutted and nailed to the stables by his apparently own hand. The rest of the people in Skyhold have been dismembered and their body parts are kind of just like scattered all over. So it's a very gruesome scene. And the culprit very quickly manifests. It is the demon of regret. And the body of this demon is formed out of the plaster of Solas's murals to the Inquisitor. The demon has multiple eyes and looks like a wolf that has absorbed a dragon. It claims to be, quote, the regret of a god. So, yeah, go ahead.
Just, I know this isn't about Sutherland, but I just, the theories of a wolf that absorbs a dragon and the fact that the last time one of the last times we see Solas, he is, quote unquote, absorbing the spirit of Flemeth Mathal, who is most notably able to turn into a dragon, and Solas is the dread wolf. I'm just going to let everyone figure out where I'm going with that for themselves.
It is very dreadful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so anyway, back to Sutherland. So they're here with this demon, and basically, like, what the demon does is if it makes you feel regret, like you get incapacitated. And so the demon neutralizes Sutherland's friends, Voth and Shade, because of their regrets. But Sutherland is unaffected because he has no regrets, at least when it comes to the Inquisition. And so they had planned to have backup arrive. And so Rat, who is now his squire, but also Dagna, Harriet, Morris, Cabot, and Alon Vimal all show up to help Sutherland. With his friends' trust in him, he lures out the demon, saying that he regrets acting alone, he regrets using his friends, and he regrets the present moment, the demon itself. And so at that moment, that's when everyone kind of steps out of the shadows and they all attack this demon together and send it back to the Fade. And that's the callback chapter in To Winter Nights.
I think it's really, really sweet. That's when Faye Sutherland is like, I don't have any regrets about the Inquisition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was the best thing in my life.
And like, why would he? The Inquisitor, especially if the Inquisitor has like done all the missions, like the Inquisitor did nothing but train you and invest in you. Like, of course, it was like the good old days for you. So that makes total sense to me. But I also love this story and his inclusion in To Winter Nights, because we see like he is no longer this like young kid who is inexperienced, who is a child playing at being a grown up. Like, he's matured a lot. He's an adult now. And so I do very much appreciate that kind of growth for such a minor, forgettable side character.
Right. Or missable too.
Yeah, absolutely. So I do have some trivia before we kind of wrap this episode up. Now, interestingly enough, we never knew his first name until the Mage Killer comic was released. Like, we went through the whole of Inquisition. Like, if you've just played that game and you haven't read this comic, you would have no idea what the man's first name is. You might think Sutherland is his first name. So there's that. Also, interestingly enough, the New to the Crew quest for his group takes place near his home, near his hometown, which is somewhere between Lothering and Southreach. So he is a Ferelden boy. So, my last little fun fact, fun piece of trivia, is that Sutherland, in my opinion, is one of the very few East Asian coded characters that we get in all of Dragon Age. I know there's some argument about this online. To me, he looks Asian. And so I personally hope we see more of him and that we can, you know, give some more representation to this group who is like notoriously underrepresented throughout all of the Dragon Age games.
Yeah, I hope we can do that as well. I want more representation of all of that. I really like Sutherland. I think he is a good example. I always like starting the Sutherland quest after you have the interaction with Bull, of where you have to meet all the other people, because it makes, for me, it makes good story sense of like, oh, I got all this advice from Bull, and then I meet this Sutherland person. I'm like, oh, let's get that going.
Yes, and I agree. I very much think that his story is pretty reminiscent of the Chargers. And just like, I feel like the Chargers very much served as an example for him, just with everything we know about what he does after Inquisition. It very much strikes me as he looked to them as influences, as role models.
And I really hope at least somewhat, even if it is just a codex entry or something, but that we get some reference that, you know, Sutherland is in some kind of leadership with this hunt for Solace or whatever is going on in DAD whenever it comes out. You know, I hope that there he isn't just like, oh, well, he's done and we've done some stories. I hope we continue to see that trajectory that he's on. And now he's like this advisor, this seasoned warrior, this seasoned military person who is there to offer advice now, as opposed to get advice and get trained.
Yeah. Or even someone who's like a mover and a shaker in Ferelden politics, like someone who has mm-hmm. climbed up the ranks, basically. That would be really cool. Yeah.
But that's all I got for Sutherland.
Yeah, me too. Well, let's wrap it up.
All right. Well, before we go, a special thank you to our Nug King tier patron, Lewis H., who gets thanked at the end of every episode. If you'd like to find out more about us, come join the Discord. You can visit our website, Cups Podcasting and More, or follow us on X, Twitter, whatever the heck it's called now, at DA Lorecast. You can come hang out with us, chat with us, tag us, do whatever you need to do. But thank you all for listening to the Dragon Age Lorecast, and we will see you next time. Thanks for listening to the Dragon Age Lorecast. You can find us on Twitter at DA Lorecast.
If you have any lore questions, topics to unpack, or side character suggestions, join our Cups Podcasting and More Discord server. It's easily the best place on the internet. You can also support us financially through our Patreon. You can find us there on patreon.com/DragonAgeLorecast.
The Dragon Age Lorecast is part of the Robots Radio Network. For more information about the Robots Radio Network, join the Discord server via the link in our episode description.
If you enjoyed the show or learned something new today, please subscribe, leave us a review, and join the Patreon. And if you enjoyed our intro and outro music, give a big thank you to Pipe Man Studios. Thank you, Pipe Man. Thanks again for listening to the Dragon Age Lorecast. We'll see you next time. Do you love Dragon Age? Have you always wanted to learn more about its vast world and detailed lore? Are you still attached to your hero of Ferelden, even a decade after Dragon Age Origins came out? Or maybe you're a newer fan, still discovering a new tidbit or quest every day.
Well, either way, the Dragon Age Lorecast is the podcast for you. I'm Austin, also known as Teacup.
And I'm Shelby, also known as SheCup.
And come and join us as we embark on a journey to explore and discover all things Dragon Age.
We'll discuss all kinds of topics, from Lyrium to the Chantry and the great mysteries of the old gods, and even more that even you BioWare superfans might not know about.
So come and listen on Spotify, Apple, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcast. And always remember,
swoop